another disappointing season for the Philadelphia 76ers. Yes, we've got to talk about it. Has the lack of rest between the two NBA seasons led to more injuries? We'll see what LeBron James has to say about that. The NBA competition committee is said to make rule changes against players making unnatural motions in an effort to draw fouls. There are many head coaching vacancies around the NBA. Which teams are set to fill those spots first? And head coach of the Clippers, Tyronn Lue, reminds us of the reason why it is important to focus on what is ahead of you. All that and more coming up on 94 Feet. Underdog upset in the second round, and one team made history. And we're getting into all of it today, guys. You already know. Welcome on into 94 Feet. This is your host, B.O. Dita, here with you today. Listen, if you're new to the channel, I just want to start out by encouraging you guys to please subscribe, especially if you really enjoy what it is that we're talking about here. Subscribe. I'll definitely be back with more content in the future. I am joined today by a good friend of mine. His name is Tristan Polnitz. Tristan, talk to me today, man. How you doing today?
How you doing, man? Good. Thanks for having me. I'm good. Feels good. I feel great. Let's get it.
That's what I like to hear, man. That's what I like to hear. And thank you for taking some time out to join us here on 94 Feet. Tristan, let's go ahead and get right on. Let's get right on into it, man, on what's on my mind. The Philadelphia 76ers. They fell to the Atlanta Hawks 103-96 in Game 7. Tristan, what are your biggest takeaways from this series?
I would say there was a lot of pivotal moments where there were the Sixers could have pulled away or could have showed why they're the number one seed. But if you want me to be blatantly honest,
go ahead, air it out.
In my opinion, we all know why the Sixers lost, and we don't need to sugarcoat it. Like, we don't need to put a little cherry stem on it. Like, we all know why Sixers lost. The second highest paid player on their team scored, correct me if I'm wrong, 19 points in like the last three games combined.
Right. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know it wasn't good.
To me, that's unacceptable. And I think with him, it's a mental thing. I've been talking to a lot of people. I talked to my trainer this morning, and he thinks it's all mental with him because he just doesn't want to shoot. Like, he didn't have, right. if you watch the game, like, he has no desire to shoot.
Yeah.
And then he also made a claim that people are now trying to start putting blame on Tobias, unfair blame on Tobias Harris. And my thing is, well, the aggressiveness was there.
Right.
Like, you got productivity from Joel. You got productivity from Seth. You got productivity from Tobias. Your second highest paid player, who is supposed to be a superstar, that is what the media, that is what he holds himself, that's the standard that the Sixers and himself hold him to.
Yeah.
Is scoring 19 points in three games. Combined, and leaving, like I said, check me if I'm wrong, but about 50 points at the free throw line.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you can't teach or tell somebody work on what you're not good at.
Right.
Basketball is more mental than physical. If you don't have the mental capability to sustain for 48 minutes in an NBA game, in an NBA playoff game, because a regular season and a playoff game is two totally different things. Two totally different atmospheres, two totally different playing fields. That mental aspect has to be has to outweigh what it was in the regular season for you to sustain that in the playoffs.
Right.
Right now, he doesn't have either component. So I think the Sixers have a lot of thinking to do this summer. On a bright note, I do like Tyrese Maxey.
Okay, I like Maxey.
Like Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah, he's definitely promising.
I do like Tyrese Maxey too.
Yeah,
he's very promising, very up and coming, hungry.
No, absolutely, man.
He's got a good coach behind him.
Yeah.
Papa Doc.
Gotta love Doc Rivers. Good old Glenn Doc.
Gotta love Doc. Glenn Doc.
Yeah, man. I definitely agree with a lot of things you mentioned there. And I just kind of go down the list. I mean, and I'm a Philly fan. You know, I was really rooting for Philly. Like you said, they held the number one seed in the Eastern Conference this year for the first time in a long time. Was not expecting them to get out in the second round. I actually had them going to the finals because I was actually predicting that Brooklyn would run into some kind of chemistry issue and that would kind of be their downfall. I wasn't predicting, obviously, Kyrie to be
everybody wanted Brooklyn and Philly to be that matchup. Like, that's what we were hoping for. Like, we all knew Kyrie and Harden were like a little banged up, but we still felt as though Nets can get past Milwaukee.
Right.
And they'll come back in the finals. And then it's like, all right, so now we got two Clash of the Titans in the East. Who's gonna come out on top? But now it's like they're both eliminated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so let me give you my takes, man. Embiid started out last night with his closing conference speech. He pretty much said, you know, that he felt that he gave it his all. I think he put out an Instagram post as well, just apologizing to the fans of Philadelphia. He said he felt that he gave it his all. I'm going to say he may feel that way, but I felt Embiid, it wasn't necessarily that, I guess saying he didn't give it his all is not fair, but I felt he definitely could have been more effective. And I say that in the aspect of, I understand the meniscus was torn a little bit. I understand, you know, his ability to move and his mobility was limited. However, the jump shooting, the threes, I feel like it's too much. And the thing
I think
with Embiid is you are 7'4". I think he's 7'2". You're the biggest player on the court. Clint Capella is a great defender, but guess what? Clint Capella is not slowing down a Joel Embiid. I'm sorry, you need to be in the paint.
7'2", 280.
Making your presence felt. One of his best attributes as well is getting guys to foul him. So make yourself marketable for your team. Make yourself an asset to what it is we're trying to do here and get in the paint. All right, I'm with you. Ben Simmons, let's be honest. Before the playoffs started, we knew he wasn't a jump shooter. So nobody had expectations for him to come in here and shoot ridiculous numbers, okay? I think what really disappointed me was the lack of aggression. That's what I'm going to focus on. I think at first, you know, watching the game last night, I was like many other Philadelphia fans where it was all people going crazy, trade him, you know. He doesn't shoot. And I said, it's really not even so much the shooting. I knew the shooting wasn't coming, but it was the lack of aggression, man. It's really what
the lack of wanting to impact the game. To me as a basketball player, if you're scoring is not affecting the game, if your shot's not falling, if you just, in his case, don't want to shoot, impact the game in other ways that are going to help your team win. The intangible, like, yo, play defense.
Right.
We need you to play defense. We need someone to get boards. We need someone to be scrappy. Those little intangibles is what wins the game. Set hard screens.
Yeah.
But stuff like that goes unnoticed because everybody's focused on how many points he scores.
Right. Yeah.
Now, nobody's asking Ben to come up here and chuck threes. Nobody's asking him to do that.
Right.
But like you said, the aggression, the wanting to be a factor in the game is missing from him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And his consistency has to be consistent. If that makes sense. What I mean by that is, if you're averaging like his numbers are 15, around 15, 16 a game,
mm-hmm.
for regular season.
Mm-hmm.
If he does that consistently, regular season and playoffs, I don't think anybody would say anything because at least you know what you're going to get from him.
Right. Well, let me give you an answer to that. I think the other thing that makes that tough is, like you said, we know Ben Simmons is not shooting jump shots. So that 15-16 is coming where? From going to the basket and whatever free throws that he actually makes. So my thing is, teams get tougher, teams get smarter. In a 7-game series, they're not going to let you just get to the basket like that. So that's the thing that makes the whole idea of consistency difficult in his aspect because he's so limited of a player. Let me finish sharing with you what I got here, and I'm going to let you finish up on the back end. So I agree with you in terms of what you were saying, that he definitely has something internal going on in terms of the shooting and not being able to get over that. I think as a result of where he is, I don't believe Ben Simmons can flourish anymore in Philadelphia. It's not that he's a bad player. The guy's definitely got talent. But I think his time here has pretty much reached his limits. I think he's got to be traded at this point. For the last 3 years, we've been clamoring for Ben about expanding his game, getting a jump shot, learning how to be a perimeter threat, and he hasn't done it. And it's hurting the 76ers team. It basically is almost 4-5 out there, all right? Other thing I didn't like about Philadelphia, I actually questioned some of Doc Rivers' rotations. I don't like the George Hill pickup. I didn't like it at all. I thought George Hill played way too many minutes. From the beginning, I didn't feel that was a trade that they needed to make. I thought between Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, Shake Milton, I thought they're perfectly fine with those being their backup guards in all positions. I didn't like that. I didn't like that pickup at all. I thought Shake Milton should have played more. There was one game Shake practically won it for them. He came out in the third quarter and had 15 or 16 by himself. I think he should have been on the floor way more. And it's not that Shake is a franchise guy, but I mean, at least you have a guy that's a role player that's going to come out there.
You know,
he's going to be aggressive, look to score. Yeah. He's going to look to make things happen. And that, I thought Shake should have way more, man. But George Hill, you know, I really didn't like that. My biggest takeaway from Philadelphia in this series is they didn't have a closer. You know, and I got to give credit to Paul Bennett. He's an uncle of mine who me and him, you know, we go back and forth a lot via text about the playoffs. He's been saying it to me. Philadelphia does not have a closer. And I think it's supposed to be Joel Embiid. However, he's not always consistent. Prime example, they're up by 26 in game 5 and they were outscored 39-19 in the fourth quarter. That's ridiculous. This is the playoffs, man. You can't let that kind of stuff happen. That's ridiculous, man. Go ahead. I'll let you finish up.
I would say with Joel's consistency, I would say in this playoff, he did try. And he did try to impact because he was playing essentially on one leg. But there were at times where you're not going to feel it. You're not going to feel that. You're not going to feel that injury because of the moment that you're in.
Right. Okay.
Relating to the closer, I do agree with you because I felt like they flip flop with that. Like felt like they went with whoever was hot during that game. Sometimes it was Seth.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was Tobias. Sometimes it was Joel.
Right.
But it was never Ben.
Right.
Ben's on the bench, and to me, if I'm Ben Simmons, I'm looking at that as not so much as disrespect from the coaches, but more so disappointment in myself as a player.
Right.
Because it's like if I'm holding myself to like I said before, if I'm holding myself to a certain standard in this league, I should be on the floor in the final 2 minutes of the league, in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter of the game.
Right.
Not on the bench, waiting to see what happens. I should be able to say I can dictate what the outcome of this game will be.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you on that, man. So Philadelphia has a busy offseason, obviously, to figure out, you know, what is the things look like with Ben Simmons going forward. I definitely will be tuned in to see, you know, what they do there. Moving on to bullet point number 2 for what's on my mind today. ESPN, over the last 2 weeks, has released 2 different articles regarding player injuries being increased throughout the season. Lakers forward LeBron voiced his concerns regarding this topic via Twitter. So I want to just share that tweet with you guys. It says, "They all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and the benefit of our game. These injuries just isn't part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest before starting back up. 8, possibly 9 of our All-Stars have missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best time of the year for our league and fans, but missing a ton of our players, it's insane. It's insane. If there's one player that knew about how to take care of its body, it's me. I speak for the health of all of our players, and I hate to see the many injuries at this time of the year. Sorry, fans, and I wish you guys were seeing all of our favorite guys right now. Tris, you tell me, from what I just read, do you believe that this quick turnaround between last season and the current season has compromised the health of the players?
No, but, well, yes and no. I'll take that back. Yes and no. Yes, because two teams only has 72-day off season. So, honestly, coming into the season, I wanted the Lakers to win, but I didn't expect them to. I like their exit, their injuries. They didn't catch me by surprise. Same with Miami's injuries. Like, they didn't catch me by surprise. The other ones, however, did, because they had an extensive offseason. Now it was extended because of going to Disney. But before that, everybody had the same amount of rest.
Right.
And once you got eliminated, you went home. And that was early on. And when did this season start? I forget when the season started.
It started,
It started around the same time?
I think it was the week of Christmas. I think Christmas fell on a Friday. So whatever that Tuesday was before Christmas is when it started.
Because there were no Christmas games this year.
No, there were.
There were Christmas games this year. I forget. That's my mistake. There were Christmas games.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
No. Go ahead.
Okay. Cool. So I'll let you know what I got here. So to answer the question, do I believe that the quick turnaround between this season and last season has compromised the health of the players? Like yourself, I was kind of split. I'm going to say no. And here's why. First thing is, some of these injuries that took place. So Jamal Murray with the torn ACL, Kyrie Irving with the twisted ankle, LeBron James, same thing with the twisted ankle. Those kind of injuries, to me, they could happen at any time of the year. That's not something that occurs. And in my opinion, I don't believe those are injuries that occurred because of a lack of rest. Those kinds of injuries could happen at any moment. Now, there are some other things that are different. James Harden with the hamstring. You know, they talk about the idea in the article about, that these are considered soft tissue injuries that typically tend to develop amongst people who are not giving themselves the proper amount of rest. There could be something to that. I totally get that. My thing is this. I think something else that LeBron James and the other players have to remember is that the NBA is not looking for ways to make players uncomfortable. That's not the case here, okay? The COVID-19 pandemic has been extremely tough on all areas of business, okay? Not just basketball, I mean everything. Everything in the world, in this country, in other countries, it's been tough on everybody, all right? Everyone has been greeted with the challenges of how do we do business in a post-pandemic world, all right? This isn't something that people could have prepared for. As a result, the NBA has to find ways to continue to get ahead, to continue to grow, to continue to evolve, much like everybody else. Has it been a little taxing on the players? Has it made guys a little bit uncomfortable? Yeah, of course. We had a 71-day difference between when the Miami Heat and the Lakers finished the finals versus when the season started. I understand that was the shortest offseason. I totally get that. But my thing is this. It's made everybody uncomfortable in all areas of business. And the thing is, the NBA is not looking to endanger the players. LeBron is right. Yeah, the players make up a big portion of it. Because guess what? If there's no players, there's no NBA. There's no games to watch. There's no organizations. I get that. I totally get that. But my thing is, that's not the goal. And I think you have to be able to see big picture. There's a reason why LeBron can collect the check that he makes through the NBA, all right? And obviously, if you're not playing the games, if the revenue's not coming in, that's going to hurt him. Now, he's a person that can afford to take that pay cut, because guess what? He'll probably make more from Space Jam 2 next month than the rookie that just got drafted last year. But that's not everybody's case. Some of these guys, they need their basic salary of $2 million, $2.5 million a year, because they don't have the kind of endorsements that he has. These are things I think he has to take into consideration. And I've mentioned this in the past, but it's the truth that the dollars are what keeps the business going. Go ahead, man. I don't know if you have anything else on that.
No, you pretty much hit it on the spot. I would say you spot on that. That's what Jake. I ain't got nothing to say on that one.
Nah, that's okay, man. That's all right. We'll keep it moving then. So bullet point number three, and what's on my mind? The Clippers, they were able to pull away from the Jazz in a crucial game six on Friday night. George shot 10 for 24 from the field, finishing with 28. The biggest story was a sophomore player, Terrence Mann, finishing with 39 points. The Clippers went on to lose game one yesterday against the Phoenix Suns without CP3. Tristan, do the Clippers have a chance at winning this current series against the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah, next man up mentality. And that's exactly what Terrence Mann did. Next man up. Kawhi Leonard is gone. So someone doesn't necessarily need to fill his superstar role shoes, but someone, but that fluidity, that productivity needs to be had.
Right.
And it just can't come from one person, meaning Paul George is now the biggest name on that team.
Right.
There are there because Paul George is not the only person on that court.
Yeah.
So you need productivity from your role players more so than what they gave you in the regular season. Because like I said, regular season and playoffs are two totally different ball games.
Yes.
So your role as a role player has to be magnified. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one. I think as of right now, with no Kawhi, I believe the Clippers' chances are very slim. You know, I was happy for the Clippers and the fact that they made history this past weekend, their organization advancing their very first Western Conference Finals. You know, but this Suns team, man, is hungry. Devin Booker is no joke. The role players for the Suns, Crowder, Bridges, Payne, are excellent. You know, and CP3.
No joke.
Yeah,
CP3. He's a real dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and I really felt that, you know, because CP3 wasn't there, if I was the Clippers, I really would have tried to steal game one while they didn't have their primary ball handler. And just looking forward, whenever CP3 is allowed to return, for those that don't know, he couldn't play game one yesterday due to the COVID restrictions and protocols because he was exposed to someone who had it. So he missed game one. I think for the Clippers, you wanted to try to get that game one because when they get the primary ball handler back, it's just going to make things that much more difficult. Why Kawhi isn't there. We still don't know what the status is on Kawhi. I heard that he's not completely indefinitely out, that he is receiving treatment back home in LA. So there is a possibility that they may return. I don't know. However, like you said, it really is that next man up mentality. It may not be 39 points from a role player, but somebody's going to have to be able to give him something between Batum, Marcus Morris, Mann, Patrick Beverley, somebody. Reggie Jackson played well in that game six as well. Somebody is going to have to bring something to the floor, man. Moving on to the fourth thing that I wanted to mention for what's on my mind. The fourth point was that there was a second game seven that took place this weekend in the Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee Bucks were able to squeeze out a 115-111 win over the Brooklyn Nets on Saturday. Tristan, did this Bucks series win surprise you at all?
No, because just as Phoenix did with LA in the first round, they exploited their team's injuries to what was best for the team.
Right. Okay.
Harden and Kyrie were out. So if you're the opposing team, even if you don't have three superstar names that match up with who you're going against,
right?
Now it's like an even playing field. Even though KD is a different monster.
Right.
KD is that dude.
Yeah.
But as the other team, you have to realize who you're going against and exploit that. And they did just that.
Okay.
So you gotta tip your hat to the Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. even though Nets had the three of the biggest names in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But if you notice how I'm saying biggest names and I'm not saying the team because I personally did not think that they had the best team.
The Nets.
I think, yeah, the Nets. I do not think they had the best team. I think they had three of the biggest names, and they thought if they just outplayed everybody, they would just win.
Right.
And like you got. No knock to Steve Nash. Steve Nash was a hell of a player.
Right.
But it's different coaching in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
It's different. Like, everything has different parameters. Everything you do has different parameters and specifications. And coaching in the NBA is a different ballgame. And just because you're cool with somebody or you think that you have a relationship with someone where you think that you can coach them on a certain level to the point where their dialogue is not being necessarily checked, but more so agreed with more times than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Magic Johnson this morning on First Take, and he said, and they all were agreement that you cannot, how do I say this? You cannot coach. You have to be able to coach great players.
Right.
James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving are great players.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you can't just tell them to go out there and win a game, score 80 points between the three in a playoff game and win the game.
And I had to be reminded, just to comment real quick, I had to be reminded. Don't forget, it was Kyrie who said, listen, I feel like we don't need a coach. I feel like you can coach.
We don't need a coach. Yeah, we don't need a coach.
Yeah, that was Kyrie that said that. And that was before he started. Go ahead, I'll let you finish.
No, but yeah, that's what I was getting at. And I feel like, and they were talking about how they feel like Kevin Durant piggybacked off of that in Kyrie's mindset, where they don't necessarily need a coach. They can just beat players off of pure talent.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, like you mentioned, a different ballgame amongst, you know, from being a player to coaching. I think the other thing is also finding the right kind of coach to work with players.
To play them, yeah.
And also the personality of the guys that you have there is very key. Not every coach works with the same player. And I think some people need coaches that are a little bit more vocal. Somebody that's going to get in your face and let you know, hey, this is what's up. Some people can do okay with a guy who's a little bit more laid back. And I think that...
I would say this, that I feel like teams prioritize how a player feels more so, like how a player feels and wants versus what the team needs.
Okay.
Steve Nash is who Kyrie Irving wanted as a coach. Steve Nash is not who Kyrie Irving needs as a coach.
Good take.
Kyrie Irving is a champion. Kevin Durant is a champion. Kevin Durant was coached by Steve Kerr, who is a champion, coaching level and playing level. Kyrie Irving was coached by Tyronn Lue. On a coaching level, on a coaching level was a champion. On a playing level was a champion.
Fair.
You have to want that certain challenge with yourself, and not necessarily rely solely on your talent.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because when you're not there, who's filling those shoes?
Right.
And that's an honest question. Who's filling those shoes?
Right. No, I definitely agree with you on that. I mean, I was surprised to see that the Bucks won it. I thought the Nets were going to take it. Even with James Harden getting that hamstring pull in game one, I figured with Kyrie, KD, and the supporting cast, I still thought that they would be able to get the victory. Obviously the odds became stacked once Kyrie wasn't there. You can't ignore the greatness of Kevin Durant, you know, what he put on display. He literally, you know, he did everything. He scored everything he could possibly do to help his team. He pretty much was there, trying to survive without Kyrie. It puts more pressure on the role players. And I think for what it would be that you would need the role players to provide you in the absence of Kyrie and James Harden was a lot to ask over a 3 to 4 game span. And it's tough. It's tough. That's kind of what the Clippers are going through right now, as we talked about them just a little while ago. The Bucks overall, you know, I think, you know, they were great in game seven. And the other thing that really stood out to me is it makes all the difference in the world when a team learns how to play to their strengths. The Bucks are bigger than the Nets, way bigger. DeAndre Jordan wasn't there. They had Blake Griffin starting at center. They're bigger than the Nets. And it makes all the difference when you see them play in the interior and work in the paint, as opposed to having Brook Lopez pulling up from you know, the corner shooting threes and whatnot. He's 7 feet. Use your height, use your strength as your advantage, and get in the paint. And it made all the difference in the world. Any closing thoughts on that?
No, because I feel like too many people don't know how big or how big they are. Like you said, Brook Lopez is shooting threes. You're 7 feet. Get off the line. I understand you want to branch out your game.
Yeah.
Get off the line.
Yeah.
Go be a big man. Go be what you are, a big man.
Yeah.
Go rebound. Go play physical. Like too many. This game is, the NBA to me is soft. It's ref driven. Where if you touch somebody, it's a foul.
Right.
And I feel like that's why big men are branching out to be like having these guard skills, which is very good, because it's never bad to be versatile in your game. You always try to expand your game. But
yeah,
if you are a traditional big man, a legit 7 feet big man, go be a big man.
Right.
Don't go. We have shooters for a reason. Go be a big man.
Yeah. Don't compete. You got to open more. Just play.
Yeah. Go be a big man. But like, know your role. Know what you flourish in. Know what is going to help the team, not what you think you can do. Excel in what you know you can do.
Right.
What you know you can be great at. Not what you're good at. Be great. Be great in your role.
All right. Now we're in the crunch time now, guys. This past Friday, the Boston Celtics traded their star point guard Kemba Walker to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And in return, they get veteran and former Celtic Al Horford and a young backup center Moses Brown and draft picks. Tristan, do you like this trade?
I do like it, just because I feel like people's times, like you saw my Ben Simmons, sometimes their time is up. And if you remember when Al Horford left the Boston Celtics before, he never really wanted to leave. It was just a financially suitable, better situation for him to leave.
Fair enough. I like it. I like this trade. I think Horford's presence is definitely missed. He can score in the interior. He can score in the perimeter. He's tough, and I feel like he embodies that Boston Celtic pride. Kemba Walker, mm-hmm. I still believe he's a star in this league. Still is a star in this league. The last two seasons, he struggled to consistently show that when it mattered most. During Kemba's time in Charlotte, he's never been a guy who's played or handled the ball as much. He's never played with a guy who handled the ball as much as Tatum or Brown, so I think that also could be part of his struggles. It was an adjustment, you know, and I think Boston has made up their mind. Brown and Tatum are their guys for the future. That's the way I see it. So moving on to bullet point number two, there's currently 7 head coaching vacancies in the NBA today. The Portland Trail Blazers, the Boston Celtics, the Orlando Magic, the New Orleans Pelicans, Indiana Pacers, Washington Wizards, and the Dallas Mavericks. Which one of these positions are you excited to see? This is a two-part question, so we'll do the first part of it first. Which one of these positions are you most excited to see filled? And who do you recommend? Go ahead.
You're gonna think I'm crazy when I say this, but
go ahead.
It's true. I would recommend Becky Harmon for the Portland Trail Blazers head coach.
Okay.
And the reason I would, because she has spent years under Doc. Pop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to me, Pop is the greatest NBA coach. The way he connects to players and his staff has had, and people have tremendous amount of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think someone that's coming from that organization, someone that's learning from arguably the greatest coach, arguably, because Phil Jackson will always be in that category, but yeah, I do feel as though Becky Harmon is a good coaching candidate.
So the second part of that question is, which position out of all these teams we mentioned are you least excited to see filled? So Portland, New Orleans, Indiana, Washington, Dallas. Which one of these positions are you not really that excited to see filled?
New Orleans, just because I feel like they're trying to expedite their process. Because Zion is there, and they want him to be this 25 points per game player after 2 seasons, and he's a kid.
Or his season, he missed the first half of the first one.
Yeah, he missed the first half of the season, and like they're expecting a lot out of him already.
Yeah,
and he's producing, but I'm not that candidacy. I'm not really excited for.
Yeah, I think for myself, in regards to the first part of the question, which one am I excited to see filled, and who do I recommend? So I'm looking, I'm like you. I was actually thinking Chauncey Billups would be a nice option, and I was actually thinking for the Portland Trail Blazers. And the reason why I said that is because I was looking at Dame Dollar. He's the guy who pretty much has been in Terry Stotts' coaching for a long time. I think it would be nice to see Dame in a new position and a new style of offense. I like Chauncey. Typically, you know, there's an aura about point guards tending to make great translations from players to coaches, just because the point guard is considered to be what? The extension of the coach on the floor. So I would have loved to see Chauncey in that position. However, I do agree with you. Becky Hammon would be nice, especially in today's world where you see there is more so of a push to, you know, to diversify, you know, certain things that have been always the same for so long. So I think it would be great to have the influence, you know, of a lady in a head coaching position. That would be awesome. So, I mean, I think that's a great recommendation on your part. The one that I'm least excited to see filled, I got to go with the Celtics. And the reason why I say that is because Brad Stevens, we know, who essentially failed up to his new position of basketball, of head of basketball operations for the Celtics, even though he's not coaching anymore, the way I look at it, his hand is still going to kind of be in the mix with that Boston Celtics team. So yeah, he's not wearing the title of coach anymore, but that still means whoever comes in, to some extent, it will be very difficult for them to try to implement new things. So that's the one that I'm least excited to see fill. Moving on to bullet point number three. Last week, I came across an article on Bleacher Report that the NBA Competition Committee has been discussing what they're calling unnatural motions, such as players leaning backwards or sideways in order to draw a foul. This in turn would lead to fewer free throw attempts in the future. Tristan, are you in agreement with this?
Yeah. We all know somebody that that shoots like that would relish in today's NBA game. Good old shout out to Papa Doc himself, Joshua Collins.
Joshua Collins, guys, is a friend of ours who tends to emulate the style of, what would you say, the James Hardens of the world, Tris? What do you say?
He thinks he's Jay. Nah, his favorite player is Melo. So three to the dome. Good old shoot the ball with a quick release. Post up. I got it.
Yes. In relation to the NBA, though, man, do you think, are you in agreement with this? Do you like this idea?
I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's natural motion. I think basketball plays are supposed to be natural basketball plays, not necessarily you jumping into a defender and trying to draw a foul well from beyond the 3-point line. That's not natural. A natural shooting motion is up and up, straight up and down.
Right.
Not to the side into the defender. So I think the NBA needs to change that rule and be more natural and not necessarily give players a call just because they jump into the defender. That's not a natural shooting motion.
Yeah. And I'm kind of right there with you, man. I'm in full agreement. I like this idea of being able to, you know, distinguish what really is, you know, what's really a play, or is it really a guy, you know, that's looking to get the foul call. I mean, I hope that this will, you know, this will help guys to start focusing on just the game alone, you know, and stop looking for fouls constantly. You know, and I get to basketball, and I think you mentioned this in the first segment. Basketball is a game of skill. It's about learning how to position yourself in such a way, and also playing to your strengths, you know, in terms of, you know, being able to get to the free throw line, recognizing what are your advantages that you have over the team that you're playing, you know. But I feel like sometimes it's almost to the point where guys are caught up on acting as opposed to just playing basketball again, you know. So I hope that this will help us to kind of, you know, reassess and get back to just playing the game, you know, the whole leaning into people and things of that nature. It's just too much. It's too much sometimes, man, and it takes away from the enjoyment of the game. Final thing here for Crunch Time. During the closeout interviews for the Dallas Mavericks, power forward Kristaps Porzingis alludes to his frustrations as being a secondary option in the offense. Tris, is Porzingis wrong for being frustrated about this?
No. I think it's more frustration with himself, of his productivity and his ups and downs through the season between his injuries and not getting consistent playing time. I think it's more frustration with himself not being able to produce like he used to when he was in New York.
Right. Okay. I mean, and I think he's wrong for this one. I got to be honest with you. I think he's wrong for being frustrated. You know.
Let me correct myself one more time. Okay. I would say that I think that he's wrong for, he's not, everybody has a way for how you, like, what, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Right.
And I think how he said it was wrong.
Okay.
I'll say that. Yeah, how he said it was wrong.
Gotcha. I think he's wrong for this. You know, I don't have his stats in front of me in terms of what he averaged, but from what I've seen on the floor, just going by the eyeball test, he has not proven the ability to be a threat since he's been in Dallas. He's a 7'3" jump shooter. Yes, a 7'3" jump shooter. He doesn't attack the basket consistently like he did in his New York days. He doesn't post up. And to me, his biggest issue is he's never healthy. The Porzingis we saw in New York with the Knicks has not translated over to the Mavericks.
But that's the injuries, way I see it. Injuries do play real heavy on your mindset.
They do. Injuries,
yeah. Especially, what did he tear? He tore his ACL?
I think it was his ACL is what he tore.
Was that, I know it had to be his ACL, but
yeah,
mindset-wise, especially with your knees, like you, me, I've had 3 surgeries. So mindset-wise, you're always going to be wary about your cut. You're always going to be wary about your movement. Right. You're always going to be worried about your jump placements, how you jump, how you land.
Right.
And you may think that you may feel healthy. You may think that your body feels good. But you keep trying to tell yourself that, like, oh, I feel good. And your body is telling you something different.
Right. Okay.
And like you said, he's never been that inconsistency with his health. He is weighing to him. So I feel like his frustration is more so with himself.
Right.
Because NBA is a number, like, producing is a numbers game. If you can't ask for max dollars, you can't ask for a bigger role if you're not producing the numbers.
Yeah.
Produce the numbers, you get the money.
That's a good point.
You don't produce the numbers, you can't complain, in my opinion.
Unfortunately, Trish, there's a lot of truth to everything you just mentioned. I just want to share here with our listeners. I just got a report from ESPN. It says Kawhi Leonard is set to miss game 2. He will not be in tomorrow's game. Again, just continuing to receive treatment for that knee injury. Marcus Morris as well. His status is uncertain for tomorrow's game. So just something to keep in mind, guys. All right. So transitioning to our final segment here, the line segment today, guys. The subtitle that I've given for our line segment is, what are you looking at? What are you looking at? That is going to be our subtitle for today's line segment. And what I have with me today is I have some more sound that I'd like to share with you guys from YouTube. This is from head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers, Tyronn Lue, with his comments following their Game 7 victory over the Mavericks. So this is about 2 weeks old. Let's have a quick listen to it.
You said the guys wanted this moment. How did today feel different than the last time you guys were in a Game 7 last year? I mean, how much were they just motivated to kind of get rid of that bad taste out of their mouths from last year?
You have to ask those guys that. But I know it was just a tough series for us. You know, Luka put a lot of pressure on us, you know, throughout the course of this series, which we needed. We was able to do some different things defensively that we needed to see and needed to do as well. So we got to get better with that. But, you know, last year was last year. You know, we talked about it, you know, when the season started. That's over. And we got to look going forward. You know, we can't keep looking behind and what happened in the bubble. That shit's over. So we got to do what we got to do. Keep moving on and get ready for the second round.
So what I love most, you know, or what really stood out to me, is the idea of not looking back. He essentially was saying, we can't allow ourselves to be caught up on the mistakes and failures of the past. We can't. Why? Because it makes things difficult to see the future. It makes it difficult to achieve anything with the proper or fresh perspective. And Trish, I just want to give you an opportunity to get a word in here. Can you give us an example, Trish, of maybe like if there was a time where like you had recognized that things weren't going as well as you expected in the past? I mean, you had to make a decision. Am I going to focus on what failed prior or focus on the things of the future? Is there like an example maybe that you can just share with us here?
I would say me not knowing if I would continue my basketball career. Me going the JUCO route. There was a lot of uncertainty, more so on my fault, just because of like my inconsistency and my inability to recognize that I was a student first and an athlete second.
Mm-hmm. Just real quick, I just want to clarify for our listeners, guys. JUCO, for those of you that may not know, is junior college, if you're wondering, is what he's referencing. Go ahead, finish there, Trish.
And coming out of JUCO my last year, my sophomore year, I was heavily recruited, but in the back of my mind, I was heavily recruited by D1 and D2, but in the back of my mind, I knew that the odds of me getting into these schools is very slim to none just because I don't have the grades for it. So I had to persevere through that mentally, and I feel like I landed in the best situation for me possible now, because everything happens for a reason.
Wow.
It took me a while to understand that I'm not on anybody else's time. I'm on my own time, I'm on God's time, and everything is going to come to fruition when God tells me it is, when God tells me and God allows me to have what he has in store for me.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Yeah, it's, as you speak, you make me think about, I had another friend of mine, Brian, on last week, and you know, he mentioned something where he talked about, like, you know, he had so much life to live, you know, and sometimes in the moment you can't always see it, but with time, as you look back, you start to realize the growth that was needed or the growth that you came, that you were able to achieve just through, you know, the years, you know, and that's kind of what I listened to you. That's what I take away from, you know, what it is that you're saying. I was just saying, for those of you guys that don't know, for the Clippers, this is a team prior to this year that has never been past the second round of the playoffs. In the past 5 to 6 years, they failed to win the fourth game in a playoff series after leading 3-1. Twice now. Last year, after acquiring two stars during the summer of 2019 and going up against a young opponent in a Denver Nuggets who was still looking to kind of grow their playoff identity, the Clippers led 3-1 and failed to get one more game. They lost three straight games. So, you know, what I'm trying to highlight for you is, in the past, this is an organization that has not been thriving at all. You know, the past is not really looking too bright for them. And can you imagine if coming into the season this year, they continue to ponder the mistakes of the past seasons. How would that affect your outlook on today? And this past Friday, as I mentioned it earlier, the Clippers took down the Utah Jazz in a 4-2 series win. Clippers advanced to their first Western Conference Finals in franchise history after 50 years. And at one point, the Clippers were down 25 in the second half and came back to put the series away. So I ask you again, what are you looking at? What are you looking at today? And I say this to myself before I say it to you guys, and I'm so serious. I am so serious. I mean, these things that I share with you guys in these segments is not just for you, it's for me as well. And this is why I'm here sharing it, because I want everybody else to, you know, to grow with me. That's really what it's about. So I leave you guys with a quote on this one. Quote is, "We can continue to replay the mistakes of the past, or we can replay the visions and the hopes of the future." And that's by Barry Bennett. So Tris, I just want to say thank you for joining us here today. Again, did you have any closing thoughts just before we wrap up?
No, I appreciate you having me. Honestly, I really do. You know, my boy, I love you. I appreciate you having me on your podcast. Everything we talked about was great.
Appreciate it. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for joining us today. For anybody, again, who is new to the channel, who's new to this podcast, again, I just want to encourage you to subscribe. I will definitely be back with more content. Again, I just want to touch on something. In the past, I had mentioned that I was going to have somebody coming on just to support how we can talk about supporting our loved ones through periods of grief. That is coming. Just still trying to get a date in place for that. But I just want you guys to know to please hang on. Have some new things in mind that I'm going to be putting in to place with this final line segment, some new things that I want to try out. So stay tuned. This has been 94 Feet, your host, Biodita.